Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to again thank you for joining me here at another episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. As I always say, I want to thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning. I also want to say I'm doing a lot better with my, I don't want to say time management, but I want to say getting me my beauty rest so that I won't be rushing and leaving the house a little later than what I used to. So today's topic has to do with insight into mass violence. Now, this topic is basically being broadcast in regards to people talking about it on a lot of different levels. Whether it's school shooting, domestic violence in the home, whether it's dealing with police shooting, when we talk about mass violence, violence is something that we're trying to wonder, do we really have control over it, or has it actually gotten out of control? Now, part of this topic is going to be related to how can we protect our children, ourselves, and our society? Because when we talk about violence, it is a really big issue, and mass meaning it's amongst the mass, because it's happening in a lot of different places. Now, on today's show, I'm going to have a very prestigious guest, and his name is Dr. Dorian Burton. Now, Dorian Burton is a graduate of the Chicago School of Professional Psychotherapy, where he earned a PsyD in Applied Clinical Psychology. He delivers cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT, eye movement desensitization response, EMDR, and psychodynamic therapy, as well as other evidence-based treatment. He is experienced in treating adolescents, adults, and geriatric individuals with a wide range of emotional, behavioral, and adjustment problems, including bipolar disorder, anxiety, depression, and relationship issues. Dr. Burtonley is currently an associate therapist at Christian Counseling Services. Dr. Burton works under, he put the clinical supervision of a clinical psychologist. Dr. Burton has a Master of Science degree in Counseling Psychology from California Baptist University and Master's of Arts degree in Community System Planning and Development from Pennsylvania State University. Now, prior to pursuing his passion for counseling people in crisis, he had a distinguished career in law enforcement. He began as a patrolman with the Gardena Police Department. His most challenging and rewarding assignment was serving the community as a homicide detective with the Inglewood Police Department. After relocating to the Inland Empire, he served as deputy sheriff in Riverside County prior to his retirement. He also worked as a teacher in regards to at a high school, which was Roman Day High School, which is kind of in my hometown area. He was an adjunct professor at Penn State University and Riverside Community College. Now, Dr. Burton has made numerous presentations on various subjects, including forensic psychology, policing the mentally disabled, community policing, and crisis management. Now, I'm waiting on him to call me because I know he said that he had to see a client, so I'm reading his bio to get us going. Now, if you have any questions as we are going to be talking to Dr. Burton, give us a call at 516-387-1914. Again, when you call, it will have you on the air. I would just be identifying you by your last four or two numbers so that you will know who I am talking to if you have any questions. Because part of all of this and talking about the different mass shootings and is a lot of individuals are dealing with this. We have to know the warning signs. There's a lot of things that we can do to try to prevent it and protect ourselves. Now, as we know, mass shootings are terrible tragedies. As we watch the news and engage with social media, many are becoming so overwhelmed. Many victims and survivors and others are trying to find ways to address this issue. There are several known factors as it relates to the incidents that have taken place in the U.S. and in other countries. It is also hopeful that we can prevent such incidents from reoccurring. Mass violence usually follows warning signs from attackers. Regardless of whether these attacks were acts of workplace violence, domestic violence, school-based violence, or terrorism, there appear to have some similar themes. Many individuals have explored and investigated past incidents. Many of the individuals involved have had at least one significant stressor within the last 5 years. Such could have been issues related to having conflicts with family relationships, dating relationships, being fired or suspended from work or school, or perhaps were facing unstable living situations. It is also known, a known fact, that more than half of the individuals had histories of mental issues, which is one of the things we're going to be talking about. Criminal charges, substance abuse, and nearly half were fueled by some type of personal grievance. There are several psychological effects as it relates to mass violence. So I'm going to check on, see if he's here. Give me 1 second.
I'm right here.
Hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Precious Predicaments. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Okay, and who am I speaking with?
Dr. Dorian Burton.
Thank you, Dr. Dorian Burton. I was reading your bio and was going on and on and on waiting on your phone call. So I said, I'll just keep reading until we get you on the air. So
yeah,
I want to
paper,
No, I didn't. I was running out of, I was just talking and talking and talking. And I tell individuals I tell them I like to talk, I'd rather do radio than television. Because even when I do my FaceTime, I'd be all out of control and just be babbling and hair be all over the place. And then I'm forever wasting coffee or food on me. So I said, I can't do television because I'll be a hot mess on TV. I was driving it in, wasting my coffee all on my clothes. But that's just
funny.
Jeanette. So, again, I want to thank you for joining me. And tell us, the listeners, in regards to, I know that you have a passion for this and you've done a lot of work in this field. And you have tackled this subject from many different angles. Tell us about that.
In terms of therapy, I only came in a couple of seconds ago because I still had clients.
In regards to mass violence, tell us your take on mass violence.
Definitely individuals that have untreated mental health problems. And that's my belief, that basically they have not sought help. They may have had this problem, whatever it is, a psychological issue that's been untreated and never been addressed. And that's part of the problem, is getting a diagnosis. But how can you get a diagnosis if you never go to a therapist to find out what's going on? And there's a stigma attached to individuals that absolutely try to seek help, mental health help, because the first thing most people would say is, oh, that person's crazy, because they're going to see a therapist or a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not the case. It's why am I out of control, and I do need and recognize that I do need help. And crazy just means that there's something that's off. It could be anxiety, could be depression, could be schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Borderline personality disorder. I mean, there's several things that are out there, but it's how we won't recognize it unless we actually have some type of diagnosis. It could be a doctor, a regular MD, who'll say, you know, I think maybe you need to go see a therapist, a psychologist, or whatever, or a psychiatrist. And if you need to really act on that, because there could be some type of a chemical issue that your brain is not receiving that would cause you to have a mental health issue.
Now, Dr. Burton, I have a question, because as you were saying it, I was thinking of my own family, because a lot of times when you talk about the stigma of going to see a therapist or going to talk to somebody, a lot of times, even in families, people hide it. When they know, especially their children may be suffering from some type of depression, anxiety, and a lot of times doctors are now saying bipolar, schizoaffective, and before that, schizoaffective was affiliated with schizophrenia. And then we have kids that may have been adopted and have this anger issue, these rage. We're looking at traumatic childhood trauma. We're looking at a lot of different things, and it all relates to a mental health concern. But I'm finding it a challenge, especially myself as a licensed therapist, because I am a licensed therapist with offices in Orange County, Riverside County, and San Diego County. And a lot of times when you're talking to parents or legal guardians or foster parents, and they pick up on these signs or the school is telling the parents that something is going on, many individuals put on their blinders and don't want to address it sometimes until it's too late. Now, before you came on the air, I was sharing how a lot of times, you know, it could be some of these things, relationship issues. You know, sometimes we see copycat incidents. Now, I'm on the SAMHSA's website, and they're talking about incidents of mass violence. And one of the things that they indicate is that incidents of mass violence are human-caused tragedies that could impact the whole community and the country at large. These types of disasters, which include shootings and acts of terrorism, often occur without warning and can happen anywhere, as shown by what they call, in regard to the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy. These violent acts typically target defensive citizens with the intent to harm or kill. They instill feelings of confusion, fear, helplessness in survivors, and the incidents of mass violence disturb our collective sense of order and safety and may even impact those with no personal connection to the event. Now, before I left my home this morning, I was watching The View, and Whoopi and the other individuals that was on the show were talking about how to, in addressing gun control issues. Now, you was involved in law enforcement, and I also have an educational background in law enforcement because at one point I wanted to go into law enforcement and be an attorney. But in regards to that, they were talking about the ban on semi-assault rifles and how Dick's Sporting Goods store, the retailer, indicated that he won't sell assault rifles anymore. Now, we know that guns don't kill people. People kill people. And we're going to go back to the mental health part of it. But even from a law enforcement perspective and first responders and going to these incidents, that takes a toll on individuals. What is your take on some of that?
In terms of what, now when you say it takes a toll on individuals, are you referring to the law enforcement officers? Or
on the law enforcement side? Because even with mental health, I know that they're probably doing more in regards to trying to train law enforcement officers to be able to address some of these issues. Because I know when I trained in law enforcement, they didn't teach us nothing about mental health. It was all more tactical issues. And, you know, a lot of my teachers were judges or they were police officers. And I don't recall ever learning anything about mental health issues. How to identify if a person is depressed? How to identify if an individual is schizophrenic?
Information. Yeah, I agree with you because I went to the L.A. County Sheriff's Academy. Back in the very early 80s, and You're absolutely right. There was nothing that really addressed individuals that had mental health problems. And you're right, most of it was tactical information that we were learning, or, you know, basically street survival, dealing with people who were are not narcotics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall on several occasions, and this even goes even further than that because of the ADA, the American Disabilities Act. Individuals that may have had issues in terms of communication, they couldn't talk or hear. they may have been born, you know, with this problem. And when I say problem, I mean it's something that they didn't have control over. But let's say, for instance, a police officer does come across an individual who's, in his mind, is acting peculiar or, you know, different, and not knowing that this person is deaf and can't hear, and they know really is sign language, and then all of a sudden they're moving their hands.
Well,
a police officer back in the day would recognize that, you know what, this person's being aggressive. And when in fact they're not at all, because they're used to doing sign language, and that would be their way of communicating. But how would you know that if you never, in the academy, were never taught that?
That is
true.
But
now they're starting to address those issues where they have, I believe, 20, depending on the state and the academies, they usually have up to 36 hours of training in those fields. However, what is the likelihood that you will come across individuals like this often? So that's a skill that's it's a disposable skill, which means that it has to be addressed ever so often throughout your career. And, you know, maybe every 8 to 12 months, where you have a refresher course. And a lot of times you can't just get everything that you would like to get squeezed into a 24-hour training session. It's just not going to happen.
And that is true. And, you know, and one of the things that I'm seeing is a lot of individuals are getting involved within the community in regards to trying to educate law enforcement, because that's kind of what made me take the path of psychology, was because when I was so focused on wanting to go into law and going into the criminal justice system, I wanted to know why individuals were criminals. I wanted to get into the insight of the psychotherapy part of that. And then I went into the field of psychology. Then I wind up in the field of the MFT, and I was like, oh, Lord, I don't think I'm going to deal with marriages. But by that same token, I guess God do things. Like they say, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans, because it sure wasn't mine. However, I'm finding it to be very effective, because myself and like you are knowledgeable on both sides of the spectrum, from in regard to the mental health part to the legal part in the criminal justice system, because there is a big disconnect, and we're trying to get it to where we all can work together. Because this is something, when we're talking about this mass violence, it affects a lot of individuals in regards to who's at risk of emotional distress. People at risk of emotional distress from these effects of these incidents include the survivor, meaning the injured victim, as well as bystanders in close proximity to the events, are especially at risk for emotional distress. Friends and loved ones, as it is normal for friends and family members located outside of the impact area to feel anxious about people who are direct proximity to the incident of the mass violence. First responders and recovery worker, meaning these individuals may experience prolonged separation from loved ones during the incident and show signs of mental fatigue, and the community members, meaning people who live in the area surrounding the event, may experience emotional distress. And we need to basically do better. And it was Whoopi when I was watching The View, and I'm going to quote what she said, and she did say, we have to do better. We really have to do better. And I know it starts with laws. It starts with policies. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on. But by that same token, if we all work together by talking about it and doing something about it, we can explore and come up with constructive ways in order to keep our children and our community safe, because this has really gotten out of hand. You have any comments in regards to that?
In terms of there are several nonprofit organizations where there are therapists that put together, at least the personnel that are in charge, they put together what they call a trauma response team.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually belong to one at the Christian Counseling Service in Redlands, California. And that's what we have handled. As a matter of fact, there's a couple of elementary schools where there have been shootings, and we have sent trauma teams out and dealt with individuals that have had serious flashbacks of the incident, and or the anxiety level is so high that they can't function, or they become so depressed that they and fear sets in that they don't even want to go to work because they're afraid that, you know, the incident may be repeated. And
mm-hmm.
we've actually had to, based on that, we've had to send our trauma teams out to certain schools that we've already had shootings where they were traumatized by the Las Vegas shooting. And oddly enough, a lot of those people that we have talked to have had friends and or family that were at that particular concert at that time. And so, you know, having response teams located at most of our, well, like for instance, for your offices,
mm-hmm.
those are needed to really set the community at ease so that we can go out, find out what's going on in terms of mental health issues, and then treat the individuals that have been traumatized, including the kids.
Correct. Now I'm
going
to take it to a different level. Now,
yeah.
I understand that you are a prior teacher and you taught in the city of Watts, and I grew up in Compton. So I went to the Compton Unified School District. I graduated from Banning High School. And when I don't know about your age, but when I grew up, there was a lot of school shootings, and it became normal. We became numb. It was like we were just desensitized. You know, whenever Compton High played Centennial High, there was going to be a fight. It was going to be a shootout. Walking to school, crossing the canal, many people have died. I mean, so we kind of got used to it. So when I started seeing it on the news, because I don't believe they put it on the news as much as it is now in the L.A. Compton area as what's happening now. So I was like, you know, this has been going on even when I was in school. Now, but we have to learn prevention measures, and prevention requires access to mental health services and reduce appropriate access to firearms. Now, we know that guns are still easy to get because people are buying them on the black market, and even though a lot of these individuals are, you know, like I said, dicks in regards to Walmart or doing things in regards to firearms, and they have what the police was saying, if you turn in your gun, we'll give you a $50 gift certificate, and they was trying to do all that to get a lot of guns off the street. But there are still parents that know that their kids have guns, know that their kids have weapons, know that their family members need some help. Now, just teaching in the area of Los Angeles in Watts, what was that experience like for you?
I actually I taught at a Catholic high school, and it was all boys.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they had their little testosterone rush, but for the most part, very well behaved. And if you know, if you're there at the Catholic school, then you know that you're going to get a quality education. And I'm not saying you wouldn't in a public school, but there's going to be less stress that you have to deal with because of gang activity, you know, taking place at the school itself. Yes, where we were located, we were right next to Nicholson
mm-hmm.
Garden, and they had basically access from their area onto the football field and track. And whenever, because I coached as well, but whenever we had football games or track meets, they would actually simply put a hole in the fence, and next thing I know, you'd have, you know, 100, 150 people standing there watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
And never had an incident at all.
That's great. Now, what year, what time frame was that? Because, like I said, I left.
Oh, no, now, wait a minute now. There were games there, trust me. And I know for a fact that there were individuals that were on the football and track team that were gangsters. Some of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, came from the Crips. Some came from the Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were behind that gate at the Catholic school, everything was well behaved. Everybody, no one got out of hand. They respected each other as human beings. And
mm-hmm.
they knew that, you know, in order for them to do what they did in terms of basketball, football, track, that they had to work together. And
mm-hmm.
they did that very well. And there's
mm-hmm.
pride in that as well. So, you know, we have a strong alumni association. And to this day, anyone that graduated from that Catholic high school, surprisingly, that's a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and, you know, it's interesting because I had some friends that went to Vernon Day, and I knew some other people that coached there at Vernon Day, and it was, you're right, they were coming from all over Compton, L.A., and going to a private school, but it didn't stop because, as we know, when we're talking about mental health, it don't discriminate in regards to where you live, what your socioeconomic background is, or what your ethnicity is. And the same is true with not only just joining gangs, basically, I'm dealing with mental health issues. Now, we're halfway through the show. And again, if you want to call in, if you have any questions for myself or for my guest, Dr. Dorian Burton, you can give me a call at 516-387-1914. Again, today's topic is insight into mass violence. Now, Dr. Dorian, I have some information here, and it indicates what do mass shooters have in common, and some would say a history of domestic violence. Now, I indicated earlier that sometimes when we're dealing with relationship issues, and we kind of wonder, why would this person, besides having a mental health issue, just want to go and just get upset? It's like, what sets them off? Now, some of this information that I have is coming from the Washington Post, and what they indicate is taking violence against individuals is serious, and it's also a red flag. When they looked at some of these incidents in regards to the attack on the White House Majority Whip Steve Callis, the congressional aide lobbyist of the two Capitol Police officers, you know,
right.
They talked about how when President Trump and other GOP leaders on social media and in letters to the local newspaper and contacted the House Representative Mike Bose, which we know a lot of this stuff starts with also politics has a lot to do with it also. But one of the things when they were talking about is when you're talking about domestic violence, when you're talking about relationship issues, how will individuals get upset and with over something, especially with a relationship, and, you know, trying to find out if there is a connection. Because the information indicates, despite research documenting a connection between domestic violence and mass shooting, they still don't focus on domestic violence enough in the wake of such shootings that have occurred, and a mass shooting tends to trigger passionate arguments about gun control, mental health services, and a discussion of how to respond to domestic violence doesn't even come up. Do you think domestic violence sometimes, because we're not only talking about intimate partner relationships, we're talking about just, it could be being upset with your mother, your father, just a family member. Do you think that we can, what do you have to say in regards to that?
I disagree with that. I believe domestic violence is just a small part of a larger problem.
Mm-hmm.
The larger problem being is that we all have family of origin issues, whether
mm-hmm.
they be positive or negative. And when I say family of origin, you know, kids are very impressionable. So if you're raised with a mother or father, or you're raised with just a single parent, whatever that parent is what 9 times out of 10 and what that child is going to be as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that child is being indoctrinated every day through whatever activities the parent displays as a baby. Matter of fact, even more so because it's been shown statistically that that babies are more affected than the individual who may have cognitively moved into the next level, you know, according to Piaget, when they're 3, 4, 5 years old. A baby is like a little sponge who is soaking up everything. And in domestic violence, a baby is going to be affected even more so because they operate more of on a spiritual standpoint, whereas kids that are older cognitively are operating, you know, from a learned behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Got you. But my question is, when we talk about domestic violence, not only things that happen in a home, but it could be situations where we had a school shooting a while back where I believe it was a 15-year-old broke up with his girlfriend and went back and shot up the school. But that's still a domestic violence issue because it's a teen. Domestic violence is also involved in teen relationships too. So we have a lot of different things. We're talking about relationships and trying to understand, even when we talk about whether it happens at a workplace or whether it happens at a school, talking about some of the background, trying to come up with a common thread in regards to why we're seeing these things taking place. Because, yes, a lot of times people think when little kids are little that domestic violence is not going to affect them. But as we know, and we're learning more about domestic violence, it's more than just intimate partner relationships. It goes beyond a lot of that. Whether you're dating a person now or you used to date, we got stalkers, we got a lot of stuff that is happening. And trying to put all of these puzzles together is taking a lot of us to have to work together to try to brainstorm to come up with ways of trying to reduce and prevent and eliminate, because something is going to have to give, because we shouldn't have to be at school and be afraid. Now, we only have 27 minutes left in the show. I want to speak a little bit about, they were talking about teachers carrying handguns. Now, as we know, in regards to mental health issues, we have some teachers that may be battling certain things or trying to train. If we're having difficulties with law enforcement with guns, what do you think about this with teachers with guns?
I'm thoroughly against it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it would be efficacious for a teacher to be running around with a firearm, as we saw right after the incident in Florida. A teacher apparently was showing a gun or whatever, and the gun went off. And
mm-hmm.
a couple of students were actually injured because the round split off when it hit the ceiling. It could have been a lot worse, and thank God it wasn't. But the bottom line is, I don't think school teachers need to be walking around with guns or running around with guns. They need to hire personnel to handle that, like school police,
mm-hmm.
who are actually under a lot of them. These school police departments are undermanned,
mm-hmm.
so they need to pay them. What they're worth and actually employ them and have them there and hire enough individuals and pay the salary that would actually draw school police paid in that law enforcement
mm-hmm.
realm.
And, you know, and as I'm thinking about that, and I know that in order to be or go through the Post Academy, you cannot have a felony on your record. And we're finding that a lot of individuals that may be able to do this type of job, many of them are not even qualified to even carry a firearm or do that type of work. And, you know, even bringing people into the school to be able to talk to some of these children that let them know that I understand you, you know, because I always say you have to be able to connect before you can correct any type of behavior. And trying to connect with individuals that are in pain, because a lot of that is that pain. And even talking about school intervention officers, a lot of them are still struggling with what to do with some of these kids when these kids are acting out. I mean, I was at a school one time. I saw a kid fight another kid, and on top of that, beat up the school intervention officer, too. The school intervention officer came in to try to break up the fight. The kid didn't know who that person was. He wound up flipping that man on his back. I was like, wow. You know, so there is a lot. There's a lot that needs to be done. Now, let's go back because we are, like I said, we have 24 minutes left of the show. Let's talk about the mental health part of it. Because when we start talking about certain signs, certain things that we can look for in our children, with our neighbors, because like you said, with us being therapists, we're trained to be able to identify some of these signs. But a lot of individuals, they overlook it, trying to talk to family members. I was just talking to one of my family members the other day, and as even in my family, we have individuals that have mental health issues, and I come from a family, a lot of us are violent. And not to say we're going, we'll just go shoot up a school or do anything like that, but sometimes we have family members that fight other family members, and they go off, and that is still violent. But by that same token, when you have a person in your family that you know had a propensity to do harm to others, what do you think that the blockage is from that parent or someone trying to get that person some help?
Well, you know, I'm going to address the first part of that question. A lot of individuals, if you look at it, a lot of these shooters, basically, they are individuals who have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
They are individuals who've been bullied in school, you know, made fun of. And now, you know, with the advent of social networking, bullying has been taken to a whole new level. So you have individuals now that, like with Facebook, for instance, who end up committing suicide because they've been befriended.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have other individuals who find out, you know, on Facebook that their girlfriend or boyfriend is, you know, with somebody else. And then next thing you know, these individuals figure I'm going to take care of it, and their way of handling it is through violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it more of a person who, again, who has low self-esteem, and it takes off from there. But then again, it goes right back to what I was saying earlier, and that's family of origin issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would address that issue.
Now, I'm looking at some information. And this information is coming from, it indicates, policeone.com. And what it says is mass violence, why do they do it, and what can we do about it? Now, they define, as we know, mass murders is defined as killing of multiple victims in a single incident, which we know, and it involves handguns, assault weapons, explosives, arson, and some types of mass murders are committed in the name of political, religious, or ideological causes, and we label those terrorism. But this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about more the case when we're talking about individuals that are happening within our schools and our community. Now, we know that there is a cycle. And otherwise, a normal person, no matter how stressed, doesn't just suddenly snap and go on a killing spree. But in virtually all cases, they've been studied by behavioral sciences, there has emerged predictable patterns in the evolution of mass or most mass violent incidents. The perpetrators are typically have a long-standing histories of contact with the legal system, mental health system, substance abuse treatment systems, and such was the case in, like, some of the mall shootings and the Virginia Tech gunman in this past April, and, you know, the cycle that led to the lethal explosion typically began when individuals experience a buildup of stressors stemming from health, employment, or romantic problems. Now, as I'm looking through this article, and some of the things that's catching my eye, when they're talking about some of the signs or some of the who commits these incidents, the perpetrators, when we're looking at someone with a paranoid personality disorder, That right there is something we need to pay attention to. Meaning, they have shown by long-standing patterns of misinterpreting words, actions, and motive of others as threatening, demeaning, or explosive. They may lie low and secretly nurse their grudges, or they may be quite outspoken in their complaints, often filing numerous grievance, lawsuits, restraining orders against employers, neighbors, ex-mates before resorting to violence. So sometimes they may be delusional, or sometimes they may have had situations or things happening to them. Another one is individuals with antisocial personality disorders are also likely to have left a long wake of employment, financial, legal, and personal troubles behind them. They are motivated exclusively by self-interest and will utilize any means necessary, including violence and intimidation, to get what they want. We have the narcissistic personality disorders, meaning perpetrators feel a sense of entitlement. Good things should come to them by virtue of their inherent superiority and specialistness. When they don't get it, they feel somebody got to pay. We have information in regards to perpetrators with borderline personality disorder. They experience traumatic mood swings, and they also indicate that many individuals with personality disorders may suffer varying degrees of depression, including thoughts of suicide. Impulsive violence against self and against others often go together. And the sense of hopelessness that is in part of the depressive state may impel aggressive acting out if the demoralized individual feels he has nothing to lose and decide to take others to the grave with him. Now, when we start talking about that, like I said, family members, if you're out there and you know that your loved one is suffering or talking about they want to hurt somebody or want to hurt themselves, I want to give you some information along with Dr. Dorian Burton, could also share some information to try to have people go in the right direction, because you can call 211, you can call NAMI, you can contact, if you have insurance, you can contact your provider and try to reach out and get your loved one some help. They can call a crisis hotline. Dr. Burton, what are some of the other things that they can do in regards to getting them some help, even though I'm going to provide some more information? But what are some of the things in your area where people can go to try to get some help?
Well, hotline is probably the number one way of, especially if you have individuals that are in crisis at that moment. But also, like you said, family members who recognize or need to recognize, they need to notice these things, that there's a behavioral change in a loved one that needs to be addressed, instead of, especially in certain communities where, oh, they're just having a bad day, or that individual is cray-cray. So it's something that's accepted, instead of saying that, hey, you know what, this person actually has a mental health problem and it needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to family members who recognize that and find help for a loved one.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I like that they did do is one of the ways of preventing mass violence required access to mental health service, but we have to have the access, we have to get them there, and reduce the inappropriate access to firearms, because during the Obama administration, they did do something to where individuals were not, if they had a mental health history, they were not allowed to purchase firearms, but like I said, a lot of times individuals still get a hold of them, because sometimes their parents may have guns. Sometimes they make their own homemade weapons. So I have a caller on the line. Let me log this person on. Hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Hi, Jeanette. It's Amalia.
Hello, Amalia.
Hi.
Do you have any questions to this?
Well, I've been listening in here and there for the last 45 minutes, and I think one of the questions I have, maybe more of a statement, and I'm not too sure if you guys covered it, because you might have already covered it, but with all of this linking mental health with gun violence, is there a possibility that maybe we're just adding more of a stigma to mental health illness?
it's not really a stigma, because it's not that all individuals with mental health issues, whether it's depression or anxiety, are likely to commit mass murders. That's not what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is if an individual is struggling and you're noticing that they're having homicidal, suicidal ideations, and we're
mm-hmm.
missing it, and are we ignoring
right.
it, that's where it becomes a problem. Because we don't want to put the stigma, because part of the stigma is individuals even reaching out to go get help because they don't want to be labeled or stigmatized. And that's not what we're seeing here. What we're seeing is let's address it and let's look at the behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
It's the behaviors, because we turn a blind eye on it. Now, we know that Johnny been in the room, haven't came out in days. Johnny just broke up with his girlfriend. Johnny got a gun. Johnny could go out and do something, because Johnny kind of mad right about now. So we're not on Johnny because he may be suffering or have a history of depression, but now there's a situation that has occurred in his life where he may feel he has nothing to lose, and then now the family on the news talking about, well, I wish I could have, would I should have. Now it's a little bit too late because we ignored the warning signs. And in most cases,
right.
sometimes they fail you.
Right.
That's
and
where
I think, you know,
a lot of us are failing within our family. I myself, I have situations of people in my family that I know need some help. And every time I would go to people in my family to talk to them, sometimes they make the situation even worse by egging the person on. And it's sad because when the person is an adult, trying to get an adult some help could be a challenge because unless they commit a crime, sometimes law enforcement don't want to get involved. The other person may not want to take medication. And it's one of those things that, and then when you try to separate yourself, because you don't know when this person is going to snap or go off, but we do need to do something to prevent ourselves and others from being part of a tragedy.
And I totally agree with you, Jeanette. I think I'm actually a therapist as well. And my concern, maybe I didn't phrase it right, is that we've seen in the media every time there is a mass gun shooting, they always somehow link it to mental health. And yes,
mm-hmm.
For a person to get to that point where they are going and injuring innocent people, that is, of course, they're not in the right state of mind. But looking at the statistics, I'm a numbers person, only 4% of people who have schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or depression, the majority of those people are not violent. It's only 4% that do have a history of violence. So that means that 96% of the violence that is occurring has nothing to do with mental illness. And I just,
mm-hmm.
me personally, I feel that the way that we look at gun shootings and gun violence, we always somehow, because of the media, have it linked to mental illness and as an explanation. But we really need to look at is whether this person has a tendency of anger and violence, which is then supplemented by either substance abuse or mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of in a state of fright.
When you're talking about the being a diagnosis, and it
right.
kind of goes, like I said, hand in hand, because even with substance abuse, a person can have what's called a chemical-induced psychosis, and a lot of times individuals self-medicate. It's about trying to get that person some help, because even when the incident occurred, there was something going on. So when we educate ourselves and we become more acclimated, and like I said, not label, not put a stigma on individuals, because if we all go around, and it's not to judge, because we know with schizophrenia, it's the audiovisual hallucinations, and some individuals can function very well in society. But when we start talking about trying to figure out how can we prevent this, what can we do? A lot of times it's talk, 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 and sometimes even being silent is still talking when the individual don't want to say something or say anything. Because most people know their family members and they know their kids. But we'll try to hide it. Now, another thing is, and I want to talk about, is how do we talk to our children about what's going on? Because some of these kids are traumatized. Dr. Dorian, do you have any comments in regards to that?
Jeanette?
Yes.
Jeanette. Oh, okay.
Yes.
What's the therapist that's on there? What's the young lady's name?
Amalia.
Amalia, okay. Part of what you're saying, I think, is that's not being included in the statistics is that we have what they call, and as you being a therapist, you know what a co-occurring disorder is.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes.
Okay, so 9 times out of 10, that would probably be part of the issue is that that person is self-medicating who
right.
has a problem, but they're not. They may not include that in the statistics in terms of having, a co-occurring disorder. And a lot of people don't. Other therapists are the ones who do know what that is, or the medical field. But the average Joe in the population doesn't know what that means. So I would have to say that they do have a mental health problem, but it may not be recognized from a statistical standpoint.
And I would agree with that.
Right.
And let's go to talking about how can we and what can we do to help families, survivors. We have 9 minutes left of the show. So let's give the listeners some tips, because I know that after the shooting that had occurred in Vegas, I was getting calls and clients were coming in, and, you know, we're talking about PTSD. A lot of times kids don't want to go back to school. A lot of parents don't know whether to send their children to school. We're looking at the social media in regards to what's being posted. We're looking at watching the news. All of this stuff is happening. And going back to what I was saying in regards to family members, a lot of family members are codependent, and sometimes they fail to get help for themselves and their loved ones. Teens are out there protesting, talking about gun control. And these teens now are sticking up. They're like, look, somebody needs to do something. If don't nobody want to protect us, we're going to have to protect ourselves. They're going, they're, you know, trying to do the best they can. But what can we do? What is some advice, Amalia, that you would have? And then I want to get to some of the ways we can try to help our children manage the distress after the aftermath of the shooting. Amalia?
Well, I think the first – hi. Jenna, I think the first thing that parents have to do is assess their children and teach them about emotional regulation. You know, I am feeling angry, and this is what I do when I feel angry, or giving them a safe place to express feelings. They are feeling – like I've always preached, feelings are neither right or wrong, but it's how we – how we address our feelings and how we respond to whatever we're having. So I think a lot of emotional regulation. If it is biological, you know, there is a chemical imbalance, they have schizophrenia or bipolar or depression or any kind of mental illness, then hire counselors. Be very advocates for their children. Talk to school counselors. We should have school counselors that are also trained in addressing mental illness. I don't want to take up all the time, but I think it would start off with having parents more aware of how to teach children how to regulate their emotions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a grandmother because my kids are adults, and I don't think I had a lot of school tragedies when my kids were in school. I think I had more tragedies when I was in school. But even with my mm-hmm. grandkids and them being in elementary and my granddaughter's in high school, but managing your distress in the aftermath of a shooting, because like I said, kids are very afraid now. Here's some tips for parents, individuals, and not only just with kids, but also teenagers and young adults and adults as well. Some tips that I would like to give you guys, and this is coming from the American Psychological Association, in regards to managing your distress in the aftermath of a shooting. Some tips are, talk about it. Ask for support from people who care about you and who will listen to your concerns. Because receiving support and care can be comforting and reassuring, it often helps to speak with others who have shared your experience so you do not feel different or alone. Another thing is strive for balance. When a tragedy occurs, it is easy to become overwhelmed and have a negative or pessimistic outlook. Balance that viewpoint by reminding yourself of people and events which are meaningful and comforting, even encouraging. Striving for balance empowers you and allows for a healthier perspective on yourself and the world around you. Sometimes, turn off that TV, take a break. You may want to keep informed, but try to limit the amount of news you take in, whether it's from the internet, television, newspaper, or magazine. While getting the news informs you, being overexposed to it can actually increase your stress. The images can be very powerful in reawakening your feelings of distress. Also, schedule some breaks to distract yourself from thinking about the incident and focus instead on something you enjoy and do something that will honor your feeling, which is what Amali was talking about. Remember that it is common to have a range of emotions after a traumatic incident. You may experience intense stress similar to the effects of physical injury. Another thing is take care of yourself, help others to do something productive. And if you have recently lost friends or families in either a tragedy or an incident, remember that a grief process can be a long process, but it don't have to be. But give yourself time to experience the feelings of grief. Sometimes you might have to stay at home. For others, it means getting back to your daily routine. Because dealing with the shock and trauma of such event will take time, it is typical to expect the many ups and downs, and also including survivor guilt. And I know we don't have a lot of time to go into survivor guilt because that's a whole other issue that occurs when individuals have experienced or witnessed a traumatic event. Dr. Dorian Burton, what do you want to leave the listeners with as we're going to be winding up this show in the next 4 minutes in regards to this topic?
Okay, one thing that we did not address, and that's our kids that spend hours and hours and hours playing video games that have nothing but violence, and they are, I believe they become desensitized after a while of playing mm-hmm. these many hours of these games. And so we need to regulate or control, which is very difficult because of what you said earlier about the entitled groups. But we need to regulate that and not let our kids spend so much time on these video games because it's not healthy. And really to get them outside and doing some exercise or participating in some kind of a sport rather than sitting down playing video games for hours. And it's just not healthy.
And you know, Dr. Dorian, I'm noticing that, Dr. Dorian Burton, a lot of not only kids but young adults and older adults are hooked on these video games too with the shootings and, you know, Grand Theft Auto and all this. Yeah, a lot of them are.
Exactly. And they've grown up with that. I mean, they're mm-hmm. millennials. So they've grown up with the base games, and now they're so sophisticated that that's what they know. And that's their
Correct.
Form of entertainment. And like I said, again, it desensitizes anyone, I believe, that, after a while of playing these games hours and hours on and days, months, and years. And something has to be done about that.
Correct. Amalia, what would you like to leave the listeners with as it relates to this topic?
So much. Let me see. I have less than a minute. I think we have to be advocates. I know this isn't a political show, but we also have to be advocates to make sure that Affordable Care Act, so that those that do have mental illness, they are receiving the treatment that they need. I, as a social worker, I would advocate that we do need more social workers in schools for therapists. And also, you know, as the doctor said, to be very mindful of how much our children are exposed to violence. As America in general, we are very violent society. We do like our video games, and we do, and when you look at us compared to other countries. So mm-hmm. I think my last words would be those. Seek the help if you need it. Talk to your children and, you know, try to live our lives with that innocence that children did have before we started seeing these mass shootings.
Correct. Again, like I said, I want to thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. Now, next week, we're going to be talking about relationship anxiety, because a lot of times we're talking about relationships, individuals have anxiety within their relationships, and they sabotage the relationships, and I want to give the listeners some information, tips, tools on how to have a healthy relationship and reduce your anxiety within relationships. As I indicated earlier, I will now be on the air twice a week instead of once a week, so I will be on the air again tomorrow. And I will be on the air with Pastor Dan Estelle from Higher Dominion Worship Center. And we're going to be talking about church hurt in the church. We're going to be talking about the process of forgiveness and how to get back and get your prayer life back in order as we talk about church hurt. So, again, I want to thank you for joining me, Jeanette Abney, at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. And until next week, remember, you got this. And if you need some help, go out and get it. Thank you, Amalia, and thank you, Dr. Dorian Bird, for joining me today. Okay?
You're very
appreciate
welcome.
You.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.